Welcome to the True Falls Film Festival.
Welcome to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. This is the second episode featuring our Rough Cut Retreat. True False and Catapult Film Fund hosted the retreat in upstate New York in the summer of 2018. Five filmmakers who are editing their films came from around the world to share their rough cuts with other filmmakers and mentors from the industry. After each screening, they talked through everything from concepts to technical edits. True False's Emily Edwards went to the retreat this year. A few months later, she caught up with the filmmakers to see how things were going. In this episode, we'll be talking about responsibility. We'll start by talking about the responsibility a filmmaker has to their audience. Then, we hear about the responsibility a filmmaker has to their subjects. Here's Emily Edwards.
First up, we're speaking with filmmaker Agnieszka Zwiefka from Poland. Traveling throughout Sri Lanka, her documentary focuses on one of the female leaders of the Tamil Tigers. It takes a surprising turn that requires her to scrutinize everything and decide what her responsibility is to her audience.
Tamil Tigers, one of the largest terrorist organizations, now not considered terrorists anymore by many countries. Also, I do not consider them strictly terrorists because they did, of course, horrible things. They did some terrorist attacks, but they were also freedom fighters, because in this war, both sides, actually, them and the Sinhalese army, committed crimes. So the story focuses on Vetri, who is a former fighter, but also a propagandist. She was the one who was the voice of the Tamil Tigers through a radio broadcast. We have some archives with her voice that also will be introduced in the film, but we concentrate on her journey here and now. We start 6 years after the war ended, and we're talking about a civil war between two nations that live in Sri Lanka, Tamils and Sinhalese, a war that lasted 25 years. So it's a war that affected a whole generation. There is a whole generation of people in Sri Lanka that do not know life without war. And we started to follow her 6 years after war, so it was quite fresh. And now it's close to 10 years after war. And throughout our journey, the situation in Sri Lanka actually, if changed, it changed for worse. So there is no real reconciliation from neither of the sides. There is no attempt. There was never a war crimes tribunal. The crimes have never been punished, and people still hold grudges, and people lie. They lie all the time, both sides of the conflict. So when I understood that, I knew that this is not going to be a simple story I was intending at the beginning, a story about female fighters, because that was for me fascinating, that in this patriarchal community, almost half of the Tamil Tigers were women. So a very high percentage in any guerrilla organization, and especially one from a patriarchal community. But now, for me, the story is more general. It's about how deep the scars really are. They are so deep that in some cases, the only solution is to run away into a lie and never face it.
It sounds like the film has shifted quite a bit.
Suddenly, you know, it's like the whole story took a turn that I couldn't have imagined.
Yeah.
And I discovered how my protagonist lies about everything and how much she doesn't want to face the truth. Remember that during the Rough Cut Retreat, we were talking about how we need this confrontation, how we need to show that she's not, you know, only the victim, but also perpetrator. Oh, we got it, but I will be in the film.
Wow. How do you feel about that?
I don't feel well because that was not intention, but I guess this is part of what we call the magic of documentary.
Mm. And how big a role are you playing? You're confronting her?
Yeah, because it like was suddenly very unexpected. She just suddenly disappeared and she stopped answering questions because we wanted to address this one issue of the girls that were forcibly recruited, forced to fight, that didn't do it willingly. And you know, like, I remember this quote from Aeschylus, an amazing quote, that the first casualty of war is the truth. And I think I'm making a film about this at the end, that wow. People are not interested in the truth in post-war countries, that everyone wants to live a lie, basically, and still believe in what they were fighting for. So yeah, this was really like an unexpected turning point. But since I was not supposed to be in the film at the beginning, now we will have a difficult task how to, you know, make it come through. So the reenactments are the elements of her past that Vetri doesn't want to face, that she is not even acknowledging, I think, herself. And doesn't even want to think about it. And these stories do exist. So being an honest filmmaker, I cannot just show the world as she sees it, but also, you know, these elements that build a whole picture, because she doesn't want me to show the whole picture, just a part of it, the glorious part, the part that shows her people in a very positive light, while they are neither positive or negative characters. You know, they have the good and bad side. They are, of course, sometimes perpetrators, but sometimes also victims. Yeah, and this is like our main focus. So these reenactments will be like a black mirror that she has to face, something that is uncomfortable for her to address. And we have to do it in order to show the viewer the whole picture. Plus, the stories of these girls so deserve to be told.
Can you talk about the hook a little, what that means and what that looks like?
Well, right now, for us, the hook is the confrontation, basically, because Vetri refused to address one of the stories that we knew, and she started to want to control the film, like, in every detail, deciding what should be said and what shouldn't. And after having this confrontation with me, I think it is pretty clear whose voices and whose stories we are showing in the reenactments. These are also the stories of the story, of course, it's the stories of the forcibly recruited fighters, but these are also the stories that cannot be told in any other way, because these women would never, ever show their faces in a film. So it has to be very symbolic. We will see them, but only from the back, lighted up by lights in a black film studio with just some props and just a few extras performing their stories. In a way, this is the only way we can show it or make an animation film, which I am not considering for many reasons, because these girls are still afraid, and we're talking, you know, 10 years after war, they are still afraid to speak out, because they are not only afraid of the government and of being punished. The fighters who were not forcibly recruited, they do speak out. They can tell their stories. But these ones are also afraid of the Tamil Tigers themselves, because it's not something that this organization wants the world to know. Mm. So it's like the other side of the story, basically.
Yeah, and so you worked really collaboratively with Vetri in the beginning, and I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about your relationship with her and making a film with a subject who's a really strong personality, and especially one that's used to leading and community building, and even the negative sides of that, especially as you said, she started to want to control the film a little.
Mm. Oh, yes, she's a strong character, and she's very good in manipulating people. So I think the biggest challenge was not to get manipulated. And that's why we need also these other voices to tell the whole picture of the story. You know, at the beginning, I was was completely enchanted by her, amazed. I was admiring her strength, her, you know, character, and how strong her convictions were, how much she believed in the cause. But, you know, as we continued along the road, I started to have question marks, at first just little ones, and then bigger. And then I started to question some of the things she was saying. And the more I questioned something, without really, you know, trying to make her look as an evil character, because she is not, I still believe there is this good and bad side to her. So the more questions I asked, the more things she tried to hide. And it was like being revealed slowly. Making this film, in a way, become also about trying to find a truth in a post-war country. And in post-war country, people are not really interested in finding the truth.
Are you reframing it to kind of sit around this larger ethical question?
Yes, but of course, majority of the scenes will stay. Just that the beginning will be different. We have some idea, but we need to try it in the editing room at first to kind of, you know, address this issue that we really need to address. So the confrontation and the fact that she's also a propagandist in a way. But majority of, I think basically all of the scenes will stay. It's just that the reenactments will be completely different and in different places, and they will play a different role.
I can feel the tension pretty strong about your responsibility for Vetri, about how to tell her story and whether she should be held accountable. And I felt that a lot at the retreat.
Well, you know, it's about finding the right balance. I believe most of us have this white and black side to our character. And given certain circumstances, you know, one of the sides can win. And Vetri, she's in many ways a good person, or she wants to do good. But she also, when she believes in something, she wants to achieve it regardless the way that she will achieve it through. So if it's about, you know, not telling some stories, that's what she will do. If it's about brainwashing young girls, that's what she will do. The most important thing for her is to stick to her beliefs. And on some level, I do understand that, because she was just 16 years old, 16 and a half, when she joined Tamil Tigers. She was fighting with them for 18 years. So she came out of the war as a grown-up woman. You know, her whole life was the war and the cause that they were fighting for, the liberation of the north of Sri Lanka and establishing their own country. And, you know, for her, the cause is number one. And she will never do or say anything that is against it, even if she has to notice, you know, some evil things that she did and others did it as well. The key thing is to show that she doesn't, that this is her own truth and she has right to it. This is what she believes in. This is what she stands for. She doesn't want to even address these issues, but we cannot make a propaganda film, so we have to address them in a way in a film. It will be a challenge in the editing, in the final cut, to kind of have people see her world as she does. This is my goal. But also to broaden the perspective with the reenactment to a bigger picture.
That was filmmaker Agnieszka Ziska from Poland speaking with True False's Emily Edwards about a filmmaker's responsibility to her audience. After the break, we'll explore what responsibility a filmmaker has to his subjects. First, a word from our sponsor. Hey, listeners, it's Allison. letting you know that this episode of the True False podcast is brought to you by the University of Missouri. That is, in fact, where we are making the show right now. We're here in the KBIA studios at the University of Missouri School of Journalism, which is famous for the Missouri Method. Here to tell us what the heck the Missouri Method is our podcast producer and MU journalism student, Abby Ivory Ganya.
Hey.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
What's been like a highlight for you?
I came in for a reporting shift one day. It was my second ever, and I got assigned a breaking story, and I followed it. And then the next morning, I was in line at Starbucks when somebody texted me and said they heard my story on NPR.
Sounds like you're getting a lot of good experience. Thanks, Abby.
Thanks, Allison.
And we also want to thank the University of Missouri, home to the Missouri Method, for their generous support of this podcast. Welcome back to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. In this episode, True False's Emily Edwards is talking with a filmmaker who brought early versions of his film to the Rough Cut Retreat last summer, which was co-hosted by True False and the Catapult Film Fund. Let's get right back into conversations about responsibility. Here's Emily.
Filmmaker Daniel Hymanson joins me from London. His film, Queen of the Battling Butterfly Brigade, is personal and centers around Jackie and Don Seiden, aging Chicago-based artists and teachers. Their film looks at their relationship with each other, with art, and with their house they've lived in for the past 50 years. For a filmmaker, especially when they are close to the subjects like Daniel is, accuracy and representation become a big question. Certain edits can portray someone disingenuously, while others can create unintentional implications. Either way, it's in editing where a filmmaker steps back to look at potential meanings created by the cut of the film.
I met Jackie when I was like a little kid. I took an art class with her. She taught these art classes at the school, the Art Institute for Kids. And so my sister and I took, on like Saturdays, we'd go and take classes with her. And then just like over the years, we just sort of, our families became close. And then more over the course, like I wanted to make this film and it started as a short film, and then it sort of took more time than I expected. And then over the course of making the film, Jackie and I became much closer and we became good friends.
I remember during the discussion there was one of the key like editing things for you, and a big note was should there be more moments of interaction between you two?
Yeah, I mean that's something that like we've thought a lot about, just because it's like it's like a very personal film to me, and it's about someone who I'm very close with, but it's not like about me. It's not like a first person story really, so sort of figuring out how to navigate that.
So post-retreat, what was one big note you took from the retreat that like has changed a lot in the cut?
I think like how people perceived her artwork was like really, really surprising to me. And it made me realize like how important it is to have feedback like that.
So can you talk a little about Jackie's art practice and then how people perceived it during the retreat?
I've always like loved Jackie's artwork, and it's always been like, I've always thought of it as very like beautiful artwork. And I sort of just took that for granted that everyone would, you know? And I think that I didn't realize that there were certain like ways that I was presenting that artwork that were sort of from that perspective, just sort of taking it for granted that, oh, this is artwork. And it's like just, I guess like Jackie's sort of work is very integrated into her daily life, and her, it's like she has these installations throughout her home that are constantly evolving, and they're made up of all these found objects, and they're, and she thinks of the whole house as being sort of one big installation. It's made up of all these smaller ones and in smaller spaces. And the fact that it, I just would, there were certain moments where it's like, I realized that what I thought something was doing could maybe seem completely different to someone. And so coming back, it was like, okay, we have to be very, if we're showing her artwork, be very in the house, like have it framed for the artwork and not the architecture of the house or something like that. Just like be very careful, be very deliberate about sort of how you're showing this artwork and what you want people to take away from these images.
I'm thinking of one specific moment during the discussion when they talked about it was a hard cut to the suitcases.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the moment you're thinking, where they were like, it felt like almost like she was the punchline.
Totally. Okay. I mean, that's exactly it. It's like, she says, this is, look at all this beauty around me. And then we cut to a shot of her attic. And like, how it's framed, I think, could be interpreted to show like, oh, look at all just these objects messily sort of put around the attic, instead of like, being more aligned with her point of view, that it is beautiful. And I never even thought it could be interpreted in that other way. And I was like, yeah, it just made me feel like, oh, like I have to just be, there were like moments where I was like, oh, I have to be very, very careful about how I'm presenting this person who I know very well.
Yeah, and I also, that kind of leads me into, you have this responsibility of building this character for an audience that has never interacted with her. And like you said, you know her very well, and you're so used to her. And I'm kind of wondering how you approach the balance of building a character in a very, especially, she's a very strong character, and building this character and the responsibility you hold of presenting her to an audience.
For me, it's really important that I feel like from that experience and from sort of showing Jackie to these new people who have never met her before through this film, like I just feel like time is very important. I have to be just so careful about how I'm presenting this person. And I think it just, especially during these very last steps, it's like, I think just like taking a week, taking a step back, and making sure that like we're being responsible and sort of not making careless errors here. Because like she is a complicated person, but like I'm ways that she was complicated in the film that I showed at the Rough Cut Retreat are like not ways that I feel she is complicated.
So I also kind of want to get to it that people didn't necessarily like Jackie right away when they were watching the cut. And I'm wondering kind of how you felt about that.
I guess like it, I think for people to like dislike her or dislike, hate the movie or be like offended by the movie or something, that all, I just felt like after that experience, like that all has to be fine with me. But there can't be, because that will happen, like no matter what. Like some people will dislike the movie and the people in the movie and all that. But I just like, I felt very strongly that like at that time, I like couldn't stand behind what the movie was. Like, I just have to be okay with all those things. And so like, there can't be a moment I can't be like, oh, like that, you're right. Like that is, I wasn't careful enough to like make sure that this shot didn't convey this thing that I didn't think it was to like a lot of people. Like I just felt like it's fine if, I mean, that's like, yeah, people will dislike things about her and about the movie and but I just have to like just be careful that those are that I'm okay with those things.
That's all for this episode of the True False podcast. Thank you to filmmaker Daniel Hymanson and Agnieszka Ziska, and to True False's Emily Edwards, who interviewed them. You can find more of our conversations with filmmakers at kbia.org, on iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, leave us a review. It'll help more people find the show. This episode was produced by Rosemary Belson and edited by Ryan Femuliner. The song you heard was Marissa Anderson's Into the Light. Our introduction was created by Tim Pilcher using sounds from the True False Film Fest. I'm Allison Kofeldt. Thanks for listening.